the number one hit music station. More music, more variety. Welcome to The Alternative. Playing today's new country. Oh, sorry, I was just practicing. I'm Matt from Matt Fogarty Voiceovers. I know you want to listen to your podcast, so I'm going to keep this super brief. If you're a program director and you're looking for a fresh sound on your station, hit me up. I'll do a free, no-obligation sample for you, and you can get a really good sense for how I'll sound on your station. Get in touch at mattfogartyvo.com. I'm seriously sitting by my computer hitting refresh right now. Email me. Do it.
The Sound Off Podcast. The podcast about broadcast with Matt Kundle. Starts now.
Marianne Iveson is a radio broadcaster, voiceover pro, and loves the outdoors. I'm not sure if that's listed on her Tinder profile, or if she even has a Tinder profile. You know what? I forgot to ask. She's worked in the Ottawa market for Rogers and later Bell's Pure Country before being restructured about a year ago. Since then, she's upped her voiceover business and getting ready for 2022. Marianne Iveson joins me from Canada's nation's capital of Ottawa.
Marianne.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the story begin for you?
I grew up in a very small town. It's called Tilbury in Ontario, southwestern Ontario, in between about Windsor and London. Two siblings, wonderful parents. We're all still really close and grew up playing outside and playing on the farm. My dad still has a couple hundred acres, and that's my safe and happy place.
What'd you grow on the farm?
Growing up, we did a lot of corn, beans, wheat, that situation. Never really had any livestock by any means. I remember we used to, my dad would grow like a few rows of popcorn every year. We would go pick up the popcorn just so we could pop and grow our own popcorn. I remember those days. But of course, I had family members who lived next door down the road, right? And there was always, you know, chickens around, and there's always sometimes turkeys and livestock. And yeah, that was kind of my first introduction into my longstanding love of nature.
And then why radio?
You're just diving right into the deepest of questions, right? Why radio? So I thought I was really smart. I thought that I was going to go into kinesiology. I thought I was going to go into sport. I thought I was going to help people that way. And I realized I was terrible at science, always. Never got good grades. I took grade 11 kinesiology. And not that I almost failed, but it wasn't good. It wasn't good enough. I was always good at English, was always good at, what do you want to call them, softer?
The arts.
Thank you. You should see the smile on his face right now. The arts. I was always better at the arts. And I was like, oh, maybe communications is the way to go. Being a teenager is a really confusing time. I co-opted a radio station in Chatham, Ontario, and liked it. I was good at it. Went to college in Conestoga. Was really good at it. Loved it. Loved production. Liked being on air. And that's where my love started, and realized that I was surrounded by a bunch of weirdos at college who were just like me.
Why'd you call yourself weird? Usually I'm surrounded by weirdos, they're weird, but you included yourself in the bunch.
I felt like, I'm like, ooh, these are my people. I am part of the weird. Yeah, I'm part of that. I'm not calling them weirdos, I'm calling us weirdos.
So what made you so weird?
What made me so weird?
Because you couldn't get into kinesiology because you only got like an 80 instead of a 95, which is what they ask for to get into it?
I realized that I felt like myself. I felt like the weird jokes, and you were like radio people are, I feel like I don't even need to explain to myself why radio people are weird.
Well, they've all been bonked on their head at one point or another. And I think they feel a need to speak out. They can't speak out. And the radio is sort of the way to do it, to go find yourself, to go sort something out maybe from the past.
Right. And now I'm in my early 30s and I'm still, you know, sorting through what that looks like too, right? And kind of post-radio life. But I think I just felt most like myself when I was in radio college at Conestoga. I never thought I would be good at this, but I loved producing. I loved editing audio. And realize, I'm like, ooh, I'm really good at this. I thought I was going to be a producer. Like, I remember when I was even called, I'm like, ooh, this is what I want to do. And then I got on air, and then that was most of my career other than a little bit of marketing here and there. But for the most part, it turned into an on-air career.
What was the first time you walked into a radio station and were going to get a paycheck for it?
It was at CFCO in Chatham. They didn't have OAC when you could just do like a fifth year. So I did a fifth year, did the co-op at CFCO. And I remember walking in and like, you're just this kid. And there's these radio personalities, right? That you grew up listening to. And they're like, they're rock stars to you. And they drove around the free car that I got from the dealership down the street. And it was like logoed up. I just remember thinking that on-air radio people were rock stars.
Who were the rock stars in your life?
The biggest was Dave and Chuck the Freak and Lisa Way. They were at 89X at the time in Windsor. And now they're at the Riff in Detroit. They made that switch, oh gosh, I don't know how many years ago. Unfortunately, you know, things change and people leave and people move around. But ironically, they switched 89X, the station, the alt-rock station I grew up with, to a pure country, which was the brand I used to work for at Bell Media.
It's kind of gut-wrenching when the station you grew up on flips and bails out. I mean, it really sort of, it's quite triggering. I just want to be with the cool kids and use that word.
That's an accurate word. When they, you know, and I don't want to speak illy of my past employer by any means, but that's just the way things go, is you take brands like the Pure brand or the Move brand in Bell or the Rogers Country brands or whatever that looks like, and you plop them all over, and it makes sense business-wise for sure, I understand. But at the same time, a station you grew up with most of your childhood, and then it's switching and you still work there when they switched, and it's very confusing. It's very confusing is the right word, because you're sad, but you're also like, well, it's a business decision and I understand it.
Yeah, let's not forget, across the way over in Detroit, they did the same thing. I think it was the Odyssey station went and plunked in an alternative, probably about a half hour after the after 89X left the air. That void was very quickly filled.
I didn't even know this. This is how disconnected I am.
Bell's not the only company that can go and sweep up and clean house.
Oh, no. I'm not going to put Bell in just in that court. It's all the big companies for sure. And I would say American companies are probably more, I don't pay as much attention, but it's more ruthless. Whenever I go home to see my family, I love listening to Detroit radio. I love listening to American radio because it's just different. It's just, it feels so big. The production is so tight. Even to this day, and we're in 2021 right now, you still got like the crazy overnight guy, you know? That's still a thing, you know?
I listen to Riff quite often because I've got a smart speaker in my room and I just ask for it and they play it.
Oh yeah, you can do that nowadays, can't you?
Yeah, so I've got Dave and Chuck the Freak in the house every once in a while too.
It's funny because when I listen to them now, it's not the same. I'm like, oh, my sense of humor has changed quite a bit, but I respect what they do and I respect that they absolutely kill in that, both in Windsor and Detroit.
So what was working at the Chatham radio station like?
I made a comeback there. So my first internship was there when I was in grade 13 or my lap year. But then my first full-time job was there. They hired me for middays and marketing in Chatham. And they gave me a chance, right? Like you just need, when you're at a radio school, you just need someone to really give you a chance. And they did. I think I made, what was I making? Like we can talk about early day salaries, right? It's fine.
Mine was $22,000 in 1989.
Okay, to make you feel better, mine would have been 12, 13 years ago, was $28,000. That's barely any more than what you were making.
No, it's less.
No, I said 28. What'd you say? 22.
It's less by inflationary standards.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But it's exactly where I needed to start. I didn't like, even though I grew up on a farm, I didn't like country music. But there's something, I don't know if you've worked in the country format, but there's something about the country format that makes you fall in love with it. There's a lot of great songwriting. There's a lot of great lyrics. There's a lot of just good, catchy beer drinking songs. So that's where I fell in love with country music. I had a really great team. And what I love about it is that I'm still friends with those people. And some of those people, actually a lot of them are still there. And they're legendary at this point. They've put so much time in there. And I admire that so much when I see people putting that much time into, it's like, it's unheard of nowadays to put more than a couple years, 6 months, into a station nowadays, right?
I successfully avoided country music radio. I think I spun a couple records all night on a station in Nova Scotia at one point. But overall, I made fun of it, cracked a lot of jokes about it. I spent most of my time in rock radio. So tell me what I missed.
You may argue me on this.
No, I will not argue this. Just tell me what I missed.
So I would say most of my career was spent in country radio, worked in country in Ottawa for the entire 8 years that I worked in radio here as well. And the concerts and the artists are simply the best, I would say. Because I've worked in pop and I've worked in rock. So I'm not just like biased because I've worked in all the formats or most of the big major formats, right? So I know, or I think I know, but the artists are more accessible. The Canadian talent is like on par with the American talent a lot of the time too. They're much more available. Like I said, they're much more accessible for interviews and meet and greets. And some of them actually just become your friends, which is great. And then it comes to the actual concerts. I would say my favorite concert of all time was Chris Stapleton at the Canadian Tire Centre here in Ottawa. The concerts are full of very, very passionate fans. And you can't help but soak in that energy.
How'd you get to Ottawa?
Chatham to Sudbury. Spent a few years in Sudbury. Did you not know this?
No, I missed that part. Is that on your LinkedIn?
It's on my Wikipedia page.
You have a Wikipedia page?
No, I don't. It's so funny. It's like I've reconnected with a bunch of people lately, including some friends from Sudbury too. So I spent a few years in Sudbury, and then I got a morning show job at the Rogers Station in Ottawa. And me and my partner at the time moved, and he's in radio. He's actually still currently in radio. We're not together anymore, but we packed our bags and moved to Ottawa and spent about a year, year and a half at the Rogers Station. Then Bell flipped to country, and I went over there and did drive for the rest of my radio career.
Well, what'd you do in Sudbury? What station?
I was at Q92, so this is when I did rock, yes.
Thought there was a little rock in there. Nice. So tell me about the Sudbury experience.
By the way, I just want to like sidebar for a sec. I love this because it digs up so many memories and so much emotion in both positive and negative ways, which is I'm totally fine with, and I love rehashing this. This is great. So, okay, question was, how was Sudbury?
Yeah, give me the good and give me the bad.
The good. So I did middays on Q92. I did a lot of the network stuff too. At some points, I did 3 or 4 midday shows at one point, you know, North Bay, Timmins, Sudbury, and you know the whole situation there. I did mornings. Was it Easy Rock at the time or Kiss? I don't remember when it switched over, but I moved over to mornings, did the pop situation.
The pop situation. I love that.
I love pop music. Top 40 music is like is most of my jam, to be honest. But it's not my favorite format to work in. I'd like to think that I have a generic enough voice that I can work in any format, to be honest. But Sudbury, it was a great experience. Glad I'm not there anymore.
Somewhere on a billboard, they're going to put that up. Sudbury, glad you're not here anymore.
Like with my face? Or just a generic like Sudbury experience?
Yeah, for anybody who leaves.
No. I don't want to bat. Like, that just was like, I have a lot of friends there still. And like, it was my home for like 3 years and I loved it. But it's because I love Ottawa so much, even like get rid of the entire radio side. I'm still here. I'm not in radio anymore. And I'm still here and I love it. And that's the thing is like, when you find a place that's your home, that is when you're like, oh, no, this is where I'm meant to be. This is where I want to spend my time. This is where I want to hopefully spend the rest of my life.
And Sudbury is such a great radio market in terms of being able to grow your skills and get involved with the community as well.
It was great. And like, there were so many, I want to shout out to Mel Dahl. Do you know Mel?
No.
Mel was there from the Q92 beginnings. And when you have mentors like that and people who take you under your wing and who you could call literally any time and talk about radio to this. If I called her probably today, she would answer the phone and we'd have a wonderful chat. Hillary Welch, who I absolutely love, is still a friend to me today. There's so many great people there, like Gary Beach, Rich Griffin. May he rest in peace. I did a morning show with him and Gary. I feel bad because there's so many wonderful people there and I just don't want to just drop names and then miss people. But having mentors like that and friendships that will always last through hopefully the rest of my life, right? When you move away from home and you move by yourself and then you find a different kind of family, I think that's one of the best things about radio is it's all these like people who come from different parts of the country who come together and become these little families. Like I spent a lot of Christmases and holidays away from my family because it was, you know, a 6-8 hour drive, or in your case, you know, you had like a flight across the country. So people take you under their wing and they take care of you. And I'll never forget that. And we'll always be grateful for that.
I figure that if you work in about 3, maybe 4 Canadian markets, after a while, say another 7 years passes, you probably know somebody in just about every market across the country that you could drive across it and have a place to stay or a person to visit all the way to Vancouver.
I haven't even worked in Vancouver, and I'm sure I could find someone who lives there now, who's selling like fish on the shore or something, who left radio.
Who rescued you from Sudbury and got you to Ottawa?
I was still in the Rogers family. They took me to mornings, so I was a morning show co-host.
It's a big jump.
Well, I was doing mornings in Sudbury, so... But to Ottawa, Ottawa's a big city. It was a big city, right?
I mean, it's a big jump because country and Ottawa and mornings, it's big. And I grew up next to it, so I know it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. And it was on the Heritage Station too, right?
CKBY?
Yes, of course.
That's my point. Like CKBY 105.3 was where it was located when I did my listening to it. I didn't know or like a lot of country, but I could hear the radio station in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, at least the 80s and 90s, and know that's a big deal. That's a big signal. And a lot of people were listening to this.
The problem was it was one of the first morning shows after the legend. It was Mark Papasak who was the morning show guy there for forever. And looking back, you know, I'm glad I had that experience and that's where I am today. But taking over a heritage show, it's almost like when you are dating and you date someone who like just broke out of a marriage, right? Or out of a long-term relationship. You don't want to be the first one. You don't want to be that first person, right? So that's how I would compare after a heritage morning show is being like the first people. Like, hi, like I know that those people that you listen to literally forever and they were in your living room and your kitchen and your car for 20, 30 years. Hey, is that a good comparison, do you think?
Yeah, it's like David Lee Roth after Howard Stern. We knew that wasn't going to last. I think there's a lot of people pushing back right now on Clay Travis, and he's following up Rush Limbaugh, who passed away. And it's not an easy act to follow, and often it's short-lived. So when did the time at CKBY and Rogers abruptly end or change for you?
That would have been about 6 years ago, because I remember not being happy. Do people talk? I was like, how deep do people go into these things?
We've had tears on this podcast before, so don't feel free to shed them, but it sounds like you weren't happy.
I wasn't happy in the situation that I was in, not against anyone specifically, but it just wasn't where I wanted to be. I loved the building. I actually loved working for Rogers, I'm going to be honest. It was a really good company to work for when I was there. And then, I don't know if you know about this, but Bell accidentally announced that Pure Country was coming too soon by a billboard. I think the billboards went up too early. Do you remember that?
I do.
And I remember it was a mix of like me and my old boss would probably be able to clarify this. It was a mix of me like reaching out and being like, what is this? And them being like, hey. And it took about 3 or 4 months to actually hire me because they were, you know, they flipped and then there was no announcers for a while and they put the morning show in. And then they finally hired me for Drive. And then I can't, you know, legally talk about necessarily what happened behind the scenes, but essentially I was on the morning show at Country 101.1 one day. And then the next day I was doing Drive at, it was New Country 94 and then switched to Pure Country. But it was like very, like it was super fast. And there was dealings behind the scenes that I will never understand. But they tell you like, hey, today's your last day. And then you get another call saying, hey, tomorrow is your first day. You don't get time off. Like you're just dragged around like a sack of potatoes and you're told what to do, right? But it was exciting. It was really exciting to try something new. And I don't think I'd ever done drive at that point, and drive ended up being my favorite shift in radio. If I was to ever go back at any point, who knows? Drive is my favorite shift, and I will argue that till my death. It's the best shift in radio. I know some people adjust well. Kudos to you. But my former partner, who's, I know he's still doing mornings, or like any of my friends still doing mornings, like that's so hard on the body. That's so hard on the mental space. But some people are really good at it.
You mentioned, though, that after a period of time when you were at Rogers, you've been doing mornings in Sudbury, then you'd been doing it in Ottawa. Could it be that just mornings was just incredible wear and tear on you that, you know, I'm done here? And then you go to afternoons and things brighten up again. Is that possible?
You're accurate on that. 100% accurate on that. Because then you kind of get your life back. You're not tired as much anymore. I would spend my mornings in Gatineau Park here and skiing or hiking or trail running or doing whatever. And then I would go and do my show in the afternoon. And I still live like in the same neighborhood as the station. And it's just super convenient. And, you know, of course, there's all those other things, like there's a community work and there's, well, not TikToks back then, but there's so much other work that goes into that too, right? But at least you're well slept and you have another life. You're able to like have a balance.
Yeah. And also you get more sunlight and it makes you happier. And Ottawa is not an easy place to, you know, to do winter because it's cloudy a lot. There's a lot of snow and it's damp and it can be a little bit depressing.
There's something about that vitamin D that just gives you a little shot. You know, you do mornings, you're up at who the hell knows when, and then you're working and then you're like, I'm tired. And then like you're freaking napping at 1 p.m. You nap like half the daylight away and then it's dark at 2. I'm exaggerating only slightly.
In just a second, we talk about mental health, future opportunities, having control of your life and doing what you want to do, and making that transition out of radio and into the voiceover world. But before she gets there, she shares her experience of her most recent radio gig. And there's more. Oh, there's always more. At soundoffpodcast.com.
Imaging and production for radio made easy from Megatrax Production Music. Add a sense of British flair to your productions with London's No Sheet Music. From the team behind Wise Buddha, No Sheet Music are musicians and music fans. It's as simple as that. Their albums range from contemporary to classical, orchestral to electronic, and they're always usable and sonically excellent. Don't miss the hottest sounds by adding Deep East music to your deal. Music from Deep East elevates a story and amplifies a message with a serious buzz. Always fresh and intuitive, and of course, the highest quality, they've always got their ears to the ground for the latest worldwide trends. Head on over to Megatrax.com or call us at 818-255-7100 for your music licensing requests. That's Megatrax.com.
Just before we start the show, I want to thank Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting for sending us a boost. He sent us 2112 sats. I guess he's a Rush fan. And he thanked us for the episode we did with Mark Asquith from Captivate. He says, great interview with Mark. Love that guy. Dave, by the way, is using Cast-O-Matic to pass around Satoshis on the internet to other podcasters. We like that a lot.
The Sound Off Podcast.
How was the Pure Country experience in Ottawa for you? Removing the part about how it ended, which we'll get to.
All right. Thanks for bringing this up. It feels like almost like a bookend. That's how I look at it. I'm so grateful for that experience. And I was on that station and I did afternoons 99% of the time. I did a quick little stint in the morning show. But to do afternoons and to build an audience and to build myself into the community and, you know, the benefit of working at the Bell station here is they have the talk station, they have CFRA, they have the CTV stations, they have like several radio stations. It's great because you all work together. You do charity events together. I did TV appearances. So you got a really good, vast experience of things. And I'd love to hear your theory on this too. But I was realizing, you know, as I was approaching my 30s and early 30s, that I was like, I don't know if I can do this forever. I don't know what radio looks like. It's scary seeing your friends laid off and people that you adore laid off every year, twice a year, and not just Bell. Every company and things get growing smaller and smaller and people being pushed to the edge. And that was really scary. And I was like, you know, I could probably do it. Like, let's see what happens. Like, maybe I'll do another 5 years here. We're in a pandemic. Everyone's kind of languishing. I wasn't super happy at the end, but that was like, I thought it was just pandemic related. I thought it was just like, I'm working from home. I'm not around any people. Like, this is so hard. I love people and I didn't have events and it was really tough. But that choice was made for me. So
I'm thinking about that building, and we've had some people on this podcast who've been through there. Leanne Lang comes to mind, you know, Milkman. He was, you know, at 93.9, albeit he was probably before your time.
Yeah, I know. I know him. Yeah.
But there were a lot of people, though. You're right. Twice a year, there would be a round of layoffs. And I always saw that whenever there were layoffs in Ottawa for either the Rogers station or the Bell station, people in Ottawa, I love how they get their back up and they go, why does Ottawa get treated like shit? And why does Toronto seem to sort of avoid all this? Because it really, honestly, whenever the layoffs come, it feels like Toronto is picking on Ottawa for this sort of thing.
But then you see, like, there was a lot of layoffs in Toronto, I would say, in the last couple rounds, I think. And then you see, you know, the TSN stations being slashed. And again, it's not just Bell, it's everywhere too. But that anxiety of it's November, it's terrible that you know what month it is, right? It's not okay. Like, that's not okay.
No, it totally messes with the mental health of performers that twice a year there's going to be a round of layoffs. I think it's May and November, generally the third week of November.
You know what's terrible is it was just like a month ago. You know, I'm not as involved. Like, I don't think about it anymore, really. I'm like, oh, it's November. Like the fact that I still thought about it, I want to be careful with what I'm saying here. But it's just the machine. It's not specific people who are doing these things. It's the bigger, broader spectrum of like the industry. Yeah, I would love your thoughts on kind of maybe where you think it's, because a lot of radio people still listen to this. I am like, I had other radio offers this year, you know, so I got laid off in February and I had other radio offers. I'm like, nope, nope, nope. My gut was like, try something else first. Try doing something else first. And I will never say never. You never know what's going to happen. But my gut was just telling me to try something else. And I'm so glad that I have. I was so scared of where the industry is headed or going. And I think there will always be a place for radio. But it also like makes me sad because I did it for 12 years.
So there's two components to this. And as your therapist, I am going to be charging you $195.
I just need transfer to you.
Thank you. The practical side of it is I was offered a chance to go back into radio and I didn't take it because I'm like, I'll get let go in 2 years and then I'm going to be 2 years behind what I'm doing now. The emotional or the psychological side of it is I don't want to be involved in an organization where I have to look over my shoulder every 6 months and make plans for what could happen in May or in November. That causes a lot of stress. Stress causes cancer. I don't want to die of cancer.
I know I'm laughing, but I'm not laughing. I'm laughing because it's uncomfortable.
It's true. Stress causes cancer and you'll get cancer and die if you keep this up. Some people might be able to shut this out. I'm not one of those persons. So I got out.
You've been like a mentor for me and I really appreciate that. And we've had a lot of great conversations. But you know that like this year has been incredibly difficult for me as I repurpose my life and figure out what the hell am I doing next? And how do I take my skills and make money off of that? But the anxiety, I feel bad for even saying it to friends who are still in radio who are stressed about this or TV or media. But the anxiety of not knowing when your clock is running out is almost worse. That anxiety, the unknown, I think it's because, again, back to therapy for a second, I think it's because lack of control is because you're not deciding that someone else might, or the bigger picture might be like, ooh, we have to cut, we have to cut, we have to cut.
There's no person behind the cuts. We all know it's an algorithm.
Are you sure it's not just like a claw machine and they like have someone's name written on each of the stuffies and then they just like pull it?
I think it's Shirley Jackson's The Lottery. It's just a dot on a piece of paper.
We both know there's rhyme and reason and it's people who decide this are people we've never met and we'll never talk to in our entire lives. So it is what it is. This is the most I've talked about this openly and in public before. It's really, it's a little awkward. It's a little tough.
So what'd you do in the days and months after February 2021 when you were let go?
It's a lot of a blur. It was tough. I don't know if we were in lockdown, but, you know, no vaccines weren't readily available yet. I had wonderful friends and people drop things off for me. I'd occasionally see one or two friends, but there was no going out partying or there was no going out drinks for friends. There was none of that. February was maybe the hardest month of my life. So the layoff happens again, coldest, darkest, like one of the darkest months in a pandemic. No vaccines or like minimal vaccines at that point for people. Severe, I would say, like the darkest mental health space I have ever been in my life. I will straight up say it was depression, anxiety, and I'm still like seeking help for that. I have no problem saying that at all. And I still have moments that where I'm like, what am I doing with my life? It takes a very severe hit to the confidence and the ego and the what happened. If anyone who's been laid off before knows that you get paperwork for months, there's constant reminders. There's constant reminders of what happened. Luckily, you know I can say this, but you know, you get a severance when you're there for long enough. So at least you have a little bit of stability for an X amount of time, right? So there was that. But then there was a combination of I had never been on the phone more and video chats and connecting with people virtually because I was just picking brains. I mean, like, what do I want to do? What am I good at? What am I going to do next? There was a point where I was interviewing for charity, like really great charities here. I'd had interviews at the college here. So there was all these really cool opportunities, but I had this like deep, loud voice in my head saying like, do something on your own. Try it yourself. Try, like, you'll be in complete control. I think it was a really hard swing the opposite way from working for a corporation for so long. That you're like, no, I want to do it myself.
Why did you call me?
I don't remember who recommended you. It might have been a consultant who I was talking to, who said you should chat with Matt Kundel.
Dave Farrow.
It was Dave Farrow. Yes, thank you. I'm like, who was it? I was connecting with consultant because I wasn't sure if what way I wanted to go. Dave told me to connect with you, and that's how you and I became friends.
But you drunk dialed me the first time. That's an awkward way to start a relationship.
I was doing a lot of drunk dialing those days, I think. It was hard, and it's been the hardest year of my life. And honestly, just reinventing yourself. I'm so glad I'm doing it now because I'm still full of life and energy and, you know, finding that purpose. And I have so many working years ahead of me. And it's a great time. I don't have kids. I don't have a partner. So I'm in complete control of my life. And I feel like that might be rare in the future. So there's no better time to do exactly what I want to do. And I'm going to fully take advantage of that.
It's liberating, isn't it?
Even though, and I'm sure we'll get to the voiceover stuff, but even though December was the slowest month of my business so far, and I had moments of like, I'm a failure. I only had a streak of luck. This isn't going to work. What am I doing with myself here? I still feel in my soul, heart, whatever way you want to put it, that I'm doing the right thing for me right now. And that there is, this may sound bigger, but like than me by any means, but like there is always an end to everything. Nothing lasts forever. You can change your mind. I feel privileged enough that I have enough support from family and friends, and not everyone has that, but I am privileged enough to, and I want to recognize that, that I will always have a roof over my head and I will always have food on the table. So I feel okay enough about taking swings and taking chances. So I feel lucky enough to be able to do that.
And taking a little bit of that severance money and reinvesting it into your new business. So tell me about your new business.
No, actually, right into crypto. I took my entire severance and put it into crypto. And
then you sold that and then you reinvested
it. It was such a blur this year that I don't even know how I ended up here. Like, I actually don't know how I even made that choice other than taking a risk and being like, I think I can do this. I had friends like kind of in the engineering world who helped me with like a basic setup, which was super helpful. You've answered questions for me. Other people in the industry have helped me too. Next thing you know, I'm getting this, the MKH 416. And like a month into my official business, and I, right? I'm like, I'm all in on this. So August, I officially started. I'm like, I'm going to do voiceover work. I don't know where I'm going to make my money. I don't know how or what I'm going to be, who's going to hire me, but it's actually working. And there's no better feeling. Please validate me on this. There's no better feeling than creating something completely on your own and getting paid for it. And getting paid half decent for it. It's like this crazy validation.
There's a book written back in mid-2000s. I think it's called Ask and You Shall Receive. It was written by a physicist in Montreal. And it was a very simple notion that if you want something to happen in life, all you have to do is ask. Because if you don't ask, nothing happens. So somewhere between tell somebody that you're doing this or ask if you can do this, ask and you shall receive. And I think once you started to ask and tell people about what you're doing, then you started to get some business.
Well, thank you, by the way. You've funded a bit of that. I appreciate that.
I'm going to overlook the fact, by the way, that you bought that super sexy microphone in...
Literally a month in.
Yeah, 6 months or something like that. It took me 6 years to save up to get mine, but you got yours right out of the gate. Good work.
No, I did. I did it more for... Because everyone was telling me, you should try it. Your voice is good for it. What is this, like a $1,400 mic? So stupid. But I would say it was the best investment. For me, I don't want to say it's good for everyone, but like for me, it was the best investment I could have made, even though I hadn't made like any money at that point. I was like, nope, I'm going to take what I have and spend it on this and put in. My next upgrade would have to be, I work in a closet studio at this point. So my next point, I'm like, I just don't know. I don't know how I'm going to upgrade that. I haven't figured that out yet.
Oh, it's simple. You just got to go down to Value Village and buy puffier dresses to pad out the closet.
You would be alarmed to see my, to see this. I'm like, I can't believe I've made this as much money as I have in this stupid little setup. It's so funny.
But you know, the setup in the recording studio, as long as you can get it sounding okay, like it doesn't matter if you record it in a closet. Some of the best podcasts I know are recorded in closets and odd spaces and under pillows. And, you know, eventually we're going to be able to travel again and you're going to get very, very good at building pillow forts, which will double down as recording studios.
I have done one already at home. I'll send you a picture later. I did one the last time I was home to see my family. I did an entire like relaxation training course and that thing. But I remember it was David Tyler. I was on one of his sessions. He said he'd recorded some imaging with this microphone in like a hotel room before. So I think I knew. I'm like, okay, that's right. That like this is will hopefully be, again, David Tyler and I do not have the same voice, but that gave me hope that I made the right choice on that.
And for context, David Tyler is the voice at Bell for CTV News across the country. So he's the voice you hear before Lisa LaFlamme comes on to give you all the bad news of the day. David, by the way, runs a monthly, I guess, get together on Zoom called Office Hours. It's for voiceover talent. I'll put a link in the show notes for anybody who does want to come and join us because I encouraged you to come join it. And it's a great place for voiceover people to get started or even experienced voiceover people to come and just listen and share their knowledge.
Yeah, I've been a couple times and it's been a really good resource. And I feel like such, oh my gosh, I feel like such an amateur. But I'm also realizing that I have to carve my own path and figure it out myself at the same time. I love getting advice and I love, but there are things that are working for me that I'm going to keep doing and I'm going to keep going with. And there are other things I need to navigate.
What are some of the things that you learned about voiceover that you didn't know? Let's say you're back at Pure Country doing afternoons and then you know the voiceover business exists. But what have you learned along the way to go, oh, I didn't know that?
It is insanely competitive. It's very competitive, I would say, is the number one thing. I didn't realize how much so. That's the biggest thing. A lot of it is marketing and a lot of it is reaching out. So something that I'm going to toot my own horn on this is that I've always been good at talking to people. I've always been good at reaching out. I have no problem cold calling people. And I think that's actually one of the reasons I've been successful. Like, I like to think that I'm good enough and talented enough. That's confidence and maybe cockiness, who knows? But I also know that I'm really good at the sales and marketing. It's not my favorite thing in the world, but I know that I love talking to people and I love connecting with people. I mean, like, what do you need and what do you want? Something I realize I'm loving is that, and this is new, because you're so, like, in radio, you've always been in the spotlight. Right? To some, you know, lowest rung of celebrity, right? That's what I say is like, people are like, you're a celebrity. I'm like, no, that's like the lowest possible. It's very low on the ladder.
It's actually no longer the lowest. We have Instagram influencer now below.
That is top of the list now. That is what people want to be influencers. People are making a ton of money doing that.
I think people are figuring out that it's fake.
I don't disagree with you. So something I'm realizing that I'm loving is that I don't care anymore. Of course, I'm my own brand and I'm my own voice, but I'd much rather be a voice, the voice of a brand for someone else and showcase my talent because it's not about me. Like in radio, it's all about you and your personality and connecting with people. And like, that is something I actually don't miss at all. I've completely removed myself from it. I'm like, okay, here's my product. This is what I can offer you. How can I make your product or your commercial or your explainer video or your blah, 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 like come to life?
What sort of voiceover project have you done that you didn't even know existed?
So I guess I knew it existed, but I didn't realize that it was even a thing for signing a contract purposes. I can't say what it is, but I'm a voice on a children's learning app.
That's cool.
I don't know if I'm the main voice, but I know that I've done hundreds of lines and there's some probably like some 5-year old and I'm like A, B, C. So that's super cool. That's one of my more favorite ones. Something I'm surprised by is the amount of times I see in auditions that says no radio announcer voice, real person. And what's funny is, do you know how hard it is to sound like a real person?
It's a huge challenge. A lot of people get out of radio and think, well, I read 30s every day in the studio. So, and then, you know, you get out and people want a narration. They don't want a 30-second commercial read. They want a real person. They want touchy-feely. They want, you know, the big request is, can you make that more conversational?
Yes. I think I saw like a voices.com put out, oh, they put out this like this graph chart of the most requested. And it was like the biggest piece of the pie was real person of what people wanted. I would say that's been a big challenge is figuring out where do I fit in this? What do I like to do? Again, a little bit of a sidebar. I would like to call out several men that I've been on first dates with.
I was going to say, I was on a voiceover question, but no, keep going.
No, it's voiceover. It's voiceover related. Or it's like dating apps. You're like, you're all in. You're like leaning in. I love this. Several men, like not just one. It's like been multiple men who have said, oh, you do voiceover? I've always wanted to do that on the side. I have a pretty deep voice. Could you help me set it up? No acting experience, no professional speaking experience. And I'm sure there's people who make a success of it without that. But like the amount of like blind
entry into the industry.
And it's always got like, I'm not going on dates with girls. And I've had radio people and I have media people. And I'm like, yes, I want to help you. And people I already know who are like, hey, I might want to do that on the side or I might want to do that. And that's different than like random dudes that I don't really know. It almost like diminishes all of the literally hundreds and hundreds of hours I put into this business in the last, since August. And it's just like, oh, I can just do that on the side and make a bunch of cash. No, you can't. It's very competitive and very hard. And it's a whole other skill. I sound a little bitter.
Maybe we should have a talk about why you're going out on dates with people who are burning date time. And they're trying to get you to elevate their career, which is not going to happen in voiceover. That seems like a weird way to spend your date time.
Well, there wasn't second. I don't think there were second dates for most of those. And they're mostly innocent. Like, it's very innocent requests. But I'm actually so alarmed at how many people are just like, I got a deep voice. I think I can do it. Like, I don't.
People don't even want to hear a deep voice anymore.
I want to shout out, his name's Adam Ramsey. My friend Brittany Thompson, who's a program director at Bell here in Ottawa and half of Eastern Ontario, hooked me up with him. So Adam has been a really good mentor for me. He's out in PEI. He is a successful voiceover artist. He has like 50 jobs though. He's just one of those people that seems to be good at everything. I've never met Adam, but he's been wonderful to me this year. And he's got like a very kind of like normal guy voice, but he told me, maybe I hope he won't mind me sharing this, but he got like a Nintendo ad, like very early in his, I think on voices.com. He got a Nintendo ad within like the first, very soon after he joined. But like, that's just proof that they just want normal voices or like those nerdier techie voices, right? That it doesn't have to be the big booming rock guy, which I'm sure you've done in your past.
Yeah, I don't get any requests for deep reads anymore. I just get, can you sound more normal? Can you sound like a human? Can you be more warm? Can you be nicer? At one point, it was very deep and a lot of movie trailer type stuff. And I don't get requests for that anymore. People just want a real person.
Yeah. Even circling back to that, like that's one of the biggest things is what people want. And I've started to become already pickier with what I'm auditioning for, but also seeing what I'm getting hired for and what I'm good at. It's a mix of like, what do I like doing? But then also, what am I getting hired for? And like, I'm surprising myself all the time. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that that's what someone would want me for.
What are you good at that surprised you?
It always seems to be like the audition that I'm like, I totally screwed that up, that you get jobs for, which I think is funny. I'm finding I'm getting hired for a lot of like techie kind of explainer videos. I didn't realize that that's where, but I guess I have a millennial voice, so it kind of suits perfectly. I thought it'd be like, and I've done some bigger commercials, which has been really cool and fun, like in the fashion world. So I'm not surprised by that. I really like that. But yeah, it's more like the explainer stuff and like things I didn't really know existed that you would even need a voiceover for. That's really prevalent.
Congratulations, by the way, on the launch of the business. The website is now up. The Facebook page, people have to like that Facebook page.
I literally just launched it. Yeah. The Facebook page, yeah.
Thanks so much for coming on the podcast to tell your story.
Thank you for asking me and being interested in doing so. Appreciate it.
The Sound Off podcast is written and hosted by Matt Kundel. Produced by Evan Serminski. Social media by Courtney Krebsbach. Another great creation from the Sound Off Media Company. Imaging courtesy Core Image Studios. There's always more at soundoffpodcast.com.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.